Welcome to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The Taxcast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Big trouble in the tax haven of Cyprus. These ordinary Cypriot account holders want the Europe-wide guarantee on deposits under €100,000 to be upheld on their accounts. But their banks have others on their books who are no ordinary clients. Russian firms and individuals have at least €30 billion stashed there. Nearly 50% of all bank accounts in Cyprus contain over €500,000. More on that later. Mongolia's said thanks, but no thanks to a tax treaty with the Netherlands. Last year, the Mongolian Parliament also voted to cancel tax treaties with Luxembourg, Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates. Tax Justice economist Richard Murphy.
Mongolia is losing out on tax revenue because those double tax agreements have provided a mechanism for profits to be extracted. It's been basically used and feels abused. But they're also just putting down a marker on behalf of other states and saying, you can do this too. Unless you pay tax here, it's not good enough.
On this month's Roll of Dishonour, Switzerland's oldest private bank, Wegelin's, been fined $74 million for aiding tax evasion by a US court. JP Morgan executives got a grilling from a Senate panel in the US over $6.2 billion losses and serious fraud allegations. Microsoft is in negotiations with Denmark. The government there says it owes $1 billion in back taxes. Money laundering bank HSBC's finally had its license revoked by the Cayman Islands Monetary Authority. Even they've said the bank was conducting business in a manner detrimental to the public interest. But another month, another prosecution. HSBC's now been charged by Argentinian tax authorities with facilitating money laundering and tax evasion. And finally, you heard about it here on the Taxcast a few months ago, the French budget minister, supposed to be in charge of cracking down on tax evasion, is under investigation by French prosecutors and has now resigned. His troubles began when a French media outlet accused him of having a secret Swiss bank account and moving his money to an Asian tax haven. He denies the charges. And those are the Taxcast headlines for this month. You can keep up to date on the Tax Justice Network's blog on www.taxjustice.blogspot.com. Next up, Tax Justice economist Richard Murphy. Okay, this month we cannot not talk about Cyprus. Big trouble there. How sorry should we feel for the large non-resident account holders who've offshored lots and lots of money, including lots of Russians among them, as opposed to the small account holders, local resident people?
Nobody comes out of the Cyprus story well. Cyprus is a tax haven. People in the UK might not know the UK is a tax haven, but in Cyprus, everybody knows, like everybody in Jersey knows, that Jersey is a tax haven. So everybody knew that there was risk in Cypriot banks. Its banking sector is out of all proportion to the size of the economy, in the way that, for example, Iceland's was. 8 times its gross domestic product in terms of lending.
That's completely unsustainable, isn't it?
Well, there is no way that a country can guarantee deposits in that situation. Now, I think the EU made a disastrous mistake in deciding to push this issue onto the small deposit holders. Except actually, when you look at it, it's not clear that the EU did that. They simply demanded a total cut in deposits, and the Cypriot government then suggested that the small deposit holders, who are mainly Cypriot, take the cut on accounts below €100,000, where everybody thought they were protected by deposit insurance, which is EU-wide, and decided to make it relatively a small cut for those having more than 100,000, who are, by and large, those who've used Cyprus as a tax haven. The real problem is a tax haven cannot sustain a banking system in crisis, and that's a problem for the rest of the world, because, of course, there are many other places which have banking systems which are way out of proportion to the size of their domestic economy.
Okay, so While the mainstream media has been ignoring the story for a very long time about the destabilising influence of tax havens on the global economy, what, if anything, does it mean for tax havens?
Who's trying to exploit this? Oh, our friends in Jersey and Guernsey, and no doubt in Switzerland, and no doubt in Singapore. The tax haven vultures, the other tax havens, will be floating around the carcass of Cyprus right now, trying to arrange money to be leaving as fast as possible. That means this crisis is far from over. But the real issue, which is fundamental to this, is that tax havens, which produce economies based upon financial services way beyond the size of their domestic government's ability to guarantee liabilities, are a major threat to the world's financial stability. Now we could see another crisis triggered if the run on Cypriot banks creates a belief that actually there are other tax havens which are unstable and could not offer this guarantee. Let's not presume that Cyprus is an isolated example. It's isolated potentially because it's maybe exceptional inside the EU, although I'm not sure of that. But it is certainly not the only place in the world where this risk could happen.
OK, so is the EU geared up to deal with this problem? What can they do about it? What should they do about it?
Let's be clear. The Cypriot banking problem is small and amounts to about 18 billion euros. It sounds enormous, but it's tiny. The EU could fund that in a few hours. It could issue a bond to cover it, replace the entire capital of the Cypriot banking system and provide stability. The bond that it issued could be repurchased by it under a quantitative easing programme and have no net cost to Europe at all.
That means printing money.
Basically, money could be printed to solve this problem.
But should they do that, though?
But instead of doing that, they've allowed a massive banking crisis. Should they have done it? Yes, of course they should have done it. Because Cyprus was not a tax haven without the EU knowing it. Just as the UK likes having Jersey, Guernsey and the Isle of Man as a conduit for funds to come into the central economy in a way that is hidden from view, Cyprus was a mechanism for bringing money into the Eurozone in a way that was disguised and which was of benefit to the European Central Bank. They tacitly accepted that Cyprus should do what it was doing and that its banking system should act as a conduit in this way. And if it's now gone wrong, frankly, they should issue the bond to cover the mistake and bail out those banks, but then demand that Cyprus no longer, of course, behave in this way and take the systemic approach of saying, hang on, if this has happened once, it's going to happen again. Where is the next risk and what action are we now going to take to finally stop tax havens being a threat to the world economy? But so far, that question hasn't been asked. All we're asking is, well, if somebody puts a piece of plastic in a wall in Nicosia, will they get euros out? That's the micro question. The macro question is the important one, is what are tax havens doing to threaten us all?
OK, from one tax haven to another, tell us about Jersey and Guernsey. What's going on there?
The UK last November decided that it was going to impose upon the UK crown dependencies, that is Jersey, Guernsey and the Isle of Man, and on the UK's overseas territories, which are places like the Cayman Islands and Bermuda and the British Virgin Islands and Gibraltar, the list goes on, a US-style FATCA agreement. That's the Foreign Accounts Tax Compliance Act in the USA. And the reason why they decided to do this was that the US has asked each of those British territories to enter into an agreement with the USA, but with the UK acting as guarantor, because they aren't sovereign states. Only the UK can sign an agreement for them with the USA. And it was considered by each of those places that they had no choice but sign an agreement with FATCA if they are to continue as tax havens. Therefore, the UK said, we will act as your guarantor with the USA, but only on condition if you give us the same information as you're going to give the US, which seems to me to be an entirely reasonable position to take. The Isle of Man relatively quickly agreed. Guernsey and Jersey said they would not agree. In the last few days before we're recording this, Guernsey announced that it would agree, and kicking and screaming at the last minute, Jersey announced that it would also agree. This is very important because it means that the UK now has full automatic information exchange agreements with those three locations and is demanding the same from a whole range of other tax havens, which basically means that the UK will now know which UK resident person has got money in a whole range of tax havens. The sort of information exchange agreement that the Tax Justice Network has been demanding worldwide with regard to tax havens. Now, the UK is a member of the European Union. It has obtained an international agreement by its own choice from its own territories. And I believe that it may well have an obligation under what is called the most favoured nation diplomatic process, which means once it's got a deal, it must offer it to everybody else. It is almost certainly now required to offer the same FATCA-style agreement that it has imposed upon Jersey, Guernsey, Isle of Man, and in due course Cayman and Bermuda and so on, to all the other EU nation states, and indeed any other country with whom it might have most favoured nation status. Now, this isn't proven yet, but if I was now in the German finance ministry, or in the French finance ministry, or the Italian finance ministry, I'd be saying, hang on, Whitehall, I want you to now go to those places and say, if you're granting this information to the UK under an agreement, and the UK is responsible for their foreign affairs, I'd like to have exactly the same agreement, please. If that happens, these places are suddenly going to be exposed to tax haven scrutiny from a very large number of countries, and we have set an enormous international precedent. This could be very important indeed in the campaign to shatter tax haven secrecy.
Thanks, Richard. Tax Justice economist Richard Murphy. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. Our tax authorities are supposed to work for us to collect fair levels of taxes from everyone, without fear or favour. Well, this month the TaxCast talks to a frustrated corporate tax inspector about his former life working for the UK's HM Revenue and Customs.
I think some people would summarise me as traitor or something like that, but everybody who does not have a vested interest in secrecy can see that actually we should know a lot more about what goes on. I thought the best thing I could do really was attempt to show that rather than carrying on working away from the inside to come outside.
Richard Brooks is now an award-winning investigative journalist. He's just written a new book, The Great Tax Robbery. So what was the last straw prompting him to leave the UK's tax authority, the Revenue?
The big event that prompted my move was when the Revenue sold its tax offices to a company in Bermuda. And that was just beyond parody, really. They claimed they'd sold them to a UK company, which wasn't true. It was just another example of a misrepresentation of what was happening. And that's when I decided that it was time to say something.
The actual buildings that the Revenue and Customs were based in was sold to an offshore company.
That's right, to a company called Mapley Steps Limited.
Based in the tax haven of Bermuda.
That's right, yeah. I mean, it's incredible. I'm so used to it now, it doesn't shock me anymore, but anyone who hears it for the first time is just staggered. And the thing was, the Revenue went into that with their eyes wide open. They knew what was happening. This wasn't buried away in the small print, escaping their notice. They signed documents, knowing full well they were sending 650 tax offices to Bermuda, which says a lot about the state that the tax system was in. Of course, tax offices are still on the British high streets, but the rent that the Revenue pays for them goes to Bermuda.
So they were formerly owned by the public, these offices?
Yeah, these were normal taxpayer-owned assets, yeah.
Selling off public buildings to a company based in the secretive tax haven of Bermuda doesn't say much for government commitment to a number of things, corporate tax among them. But your experience of a changing attitude of government to taxing corporations, unfortunately, seems to be the experience of tax inspectors worldwide.
Probably from about 2000, 2001 onwards, the emphasis for people working on large corporate taxation shifted from getting companies to pay the right amount of tax and, if necessary, being quite forceful about that, to one where the partnership with the company was paramount. So there were lots of colleagues I knew who didn't want to go in too hard on a tax avoidance inquiry, for example, for fear of upsetting the company and thereby upsetting the senior management of the Revenue, who were increasingly judging fairly senior tax inspectors on how well they'd developed partnerships with the companies they were responsible for, rather than how much tax they were getting out of them.
And some of this fear was based on some of the larger companies having a lot of financial clout, perhaps, and being able to take these things further to unwanted, long legal cases?
Certainly, at the time, Gordon Brown was receiving moans from company directors that, you know, they were being asked questions about their tax bills, which, of course, was the revenue's job. And I think it was against that background that it filtered down to tax inspectors on the ground, who felt pressure not to be too hard, because if companies started complaining again, that would prompt concern at political levels.
So what's actually happened then in the UK is a bit like in the States. We've got some record profits from some of the biggest companies. Yet at the same time, their tax receipts are going down, but the small businesses' tax receipts are going up at the same time. So it's almost like a transfer from one to the other.
It is. I mean, the effective rate for multinationals who want to avoid tax is lower than the effective rate for small companies who don't have that opportunity.
Right, and the smaller companies also are less likely or able to use tax havens and offshore their profits.
Yeah, because there's a set-up cost. You know, they do cost a few thousands of pounds or maybe hundreds of thousands of pounds to run. So you need to be of a certain size before you can create the network of offshore companies to save the millions or billions that some of the multinationals are. There's a whole raft of tax reduction opportunities available only to multinationals, big multinationals, not to smaller companies who are put at a major competitive disadvantage. If you tilt the competition in favour of the big players, you end up with big companies getting lazy, getting complacent, not innovating at the real commercial and industrial level that you need them innovating at, but simply innovating on the, you know, at the bottom line, manipulating the tax bill. And that hits real productive business. So I think that extreme tax breaks for multinationals are really counterproductive.
You quote in your book 2004 survey of tax inspectors who were dealing with the 100 largest companies.
Yeah.
Okay, so 16% of these companies the tax inspectors thought were serial avoiders.
Yeah.
39% they thought were opportunistic avoiders, and 45% non-avoiders.
Yeah, that was an accurate picture of how multinationals view the tax system. So most of them will avoid tax. There's a substantial minority that don't, but most of them will. What's difficult is when you have a prevailing mood that says this isn't happening, that actually these companies want to play fair, when by and large they don't. So, no, the difficulty comes when you're not allowed to acknowledge the truth.
Another survey which you quote, Deloitte had a survey that 52% of multinational companies used novel tax planning ideas, which they would expect the revenue or the tax authority to challenge and or test in the courts.
Yeah. That Deloitte survey actually was, I think, from about 2000. And that was at exactly the time that there was a review of how the revenue dealt with large business, a review that inevitably it was set up to conclude that we should go easier. There was the claim that most companies don't avoid tax, which was nonsense. That was a big turning point, that review. It was called the Review of Links with Large Business, I think. Shorthand for that was the Hartnett Review, because it was run by Dave Hartnett, who at the time had just joined the revenue board.
Yeah, and he's now working for HSBC.
He is now working for HSBC, yeah, who have done very well out of the new customer-friendly approach to large corporations.
In this book, you've raised a lot of the reasons why we are where we are now. What do you hope to achieve by pointing out the context of the problems we're facing?
What I would hope people would get from it is a huge cynicism about how the tax system is run. When they're hearing future arguments on how tax should be set and levied and administered and so on, they would appreciate, I hope, how significantly the tax system has been captured by powerful vested interests. Asking how much tax a company pays and where it pays it, or what tax avoidance schemes it has in place, really shouldn't be something that's hidden. You know, there's absolutely no reason why we shouldn't know that. There is inherent unfairness in the tax system that needs to be addressed.
You've been listening to The Tax Cast from the Tax Justice Network. For more TaxCasts, you can now find us on iTunes or go to www.tackletaxhavens.com.